can't log to and from work, but you have to...
Right. But like for me on a, as a salesman running mm-hmm. around the cities, I can write all that off.
Yeah.
Obviously, I do it now, but mm-hmm. I when I started out, I didn't and
right.
got hurt on that.
Our CPA always asks that.
But I wasn't doing it before. Your safety deposit box can also be written off. So there's a lot of things that you need to do. Keep records. Bob, you had a quickie?
No, I was just going to say we're running out of time.
Running out of time. Okay.
He's giving us a signal. Okay, Bob.
Thank you for being with us this morning on the Wise Money Show. Join us again next week. Hopefully, we'll have some more information for you.
Experience counts. Now more than ever, when it's time to trust your finances to someone else, experience counts. And Lenander Financial Services are financial professionals who specialize in assisting people just like you with personal finance, investments, retirements, insurance, and long-term care planning. Call Garwin and Leanne Lenander at 651-436-3997. That's 651-436-3997. Lenander Financial Advisory. Experience counts.
Thank you for joining us this morning for the Wise Money Show with Garwin and Leanne Lenander of Lenander Financial on Club 1220 KOVB. If you have questions, comments, or concerns about topics discussed today, or would like to submit questions to be discussed in the show, please contact Wise Money at LenanderAdvisory.com. These shows are also available on podcast at KLBBRadio.com. Join us again next week at 11:45 a.m. for another edition of Wise Money with Gar and Leanne Lenander on Club 1220 KLBB.
This is where your music and memories live. Club 1220 KLBB. Stillwater, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Minnesota News Network, I'm Dick Smith. A march starts this hour outside Minneapolis City Hall celebrating the Muslim community, including those who are against President Trump's travel ban, which is in legal limbo right now. Minsure numbers are way up, but other numbers released this week show an overall 30% drop in the number of those buying health insurance on the private market.
Three-fourths of the people who are abandoned by Blue Cross Blue Shield decided to forgo insurance, even with the federal penalty for doing so, and I think a lot of that has to do with the affordability.
Governor Dayton wants state-run Minnesota Care to offer health insurance to a broad range of Minnesotans, arguing competition will challenge HMOs to offer more affordable plans. Republicans respond Dayton's plan would result in more government bureaucracy. And in a national recall, Wisconsin-based Sargento Cheese is pulling some products off the shelves due to possible listeria contamination. Specific recall information can be found at sargento.com. This is M&N.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association.
Do you wake up in the morning after sleeping 8 hours and feel like you need a nap? Well, if so, it could be your pillow. Hi, this is Stan Turner, and I wake up refreshed because I sleep on a MyPillow. With a MyPillow, you can move the patented fills so you have the exact support you need. And getting the support you need for your head and neck will get you that quality sleep you need, so you'll be rested and ready to face the day. MyPillow has a 10-year warranty guaranteed not to go flat. It's washable and dryable and manufactured right here in Minnesota. And with the KLBB 4-pack special, you'll get 2 premium bed pillows and 2 go-anywhere MyPillows, all for 40% off the regular price. Call 800-313-8659. Mention KLBB for the KLBB 4-pack special. That's 800-313-8659. Or go online to MyPillow.com and make sure to enter promo code KLBB.
Fixing your own computer is tough, but you don't have to do it yourself. See the experts at CRS. What's that? Computer Repair and Services. That's right. I mean, broken screens, viruses, forgotten passwords. Doesn't matter. The guys at CRS can do it all. You can count on a thorough job. And really, don't worry. They're the oldest PC repair store in the county. Straightforward pricing and timely service. It's a no-brainer. Right in Stillwater on Highway 5 or at 651-439-7544. Click with confidence at Computer Repair and Services.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Timeless tastes and timeless ingredients are why people ask for Wolf's. So, which Wolf's will you ask for? The Strong Golden Belgian Style Ale is light-bodied, yet seductively strong warmer. Maybe it's the Berlin-style Weiss, the sour wheat ale that's dubbed the Champagne of the North. Or perhaps it's the German-style ale Weizenbach, the dark wheat ale brewed to Bach strength. Whichever, make sure you ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota. Go to wolfbrewing.com.
Overcast today with highs around 37. Northwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, chance for mixed precipitation. Lows dip down to about 28. Mainly sunny skies and calm. Tomorrow, highs around 36. Temperatures above average Monday and Tuesday with highs from the mid-30s to the low 40s. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on Club 1220 KLBB, where your music and memories live. Right now, 39.
I'd say we're off to a good start. You heard the weather lady there say we're looking for a high today about 37, and then she told us the current temperature is 39 already, so we're bumping up against 40. That's a good way to start. Well, you've heard of June and January. How about April and February? I kind of like the ring of that. I like the sound. Welcome aboard, everybody. Stan Turner with you here, and so happy that you're joining us here. We've been here for a long time doing this show on Saturdays at noon. I think soon we'll be going into our 12th year. And thank you to so many of you who join us here just about every week. We appreciate it. We try to bring you stories, all true stories. People love storytelling, but stories that are interesting and informative. That's our goal anyway. So I think we can fill the bill without too much trouble today. Jesse, good afternoon to you. How you doing?
Wonderful. Yourself?
Good, thank you. Liking the weather, are you?
Loving it.
Yeah, we had 46 degrees for a topper yesterday in the Twin Cities. You believe that? February 10th, huh?
I was out in shorts.
And I think in southwestern Minnesota, some places, maybe Redwood Falls, registered 60 degrees.
Ooh.
Wow! Liking that, too, huh? So, here we go. Well, you know, let's keep talking about good news all hour, shall we? Huh? Let's do it here. Well, many of us have tackled, fix-up, clean-up projects around the house or the office. You know, it can be fun. and satisfying putting a fresh face on that porch or that roof or the family room or that filing or storage space at work. Yes, restorations of this kind can be satisfying, but as you know, they can also be spendy. This hour, we're going to talk about a restoration on a grand scale, one that is very satisfying and, yes, very spendy, but worth every cent. We are talking about Minnesota's Capitol Building, that bright, shining marble and granite jewel on a hill overlooking downtown St. Paul. After about 4 years of gutting and digging and polishing and replacing, it's shining brighter and more majestically than at any time since it opened way back in 1905. Now, to get the full impact, you really have to visit the place, the refaced and updated Capitol, and we hope you will if you haven't already. Right now, though, we're going to give you a... Jesse, we could call this a virtual tour, can't we? Using
Certainly.
The theater of our mind here, huh? Painting
Oh, yeah.
Word pictures, we'll do that. The history and all the magnificent trappings of the State Capitol Building, courtesy of a guy who knows it best. Brian Pease is the Minnesota Historical Society's site manager at the State Capitol. And, as you might guess, Brian is fairly bursting with pride now that this gem of a building is again open for tours, and jaws are dropping as we see a place as we've never seen it before. Brian, this is a great moment. Thanks for coming down and sharing the good news.
Great to be back.
Thank you, brother. Wow. So this big restoration, this cleanup fix-up deal, going on for about 4 years, but the planning long before that.
Hmm? Yeah, it's been a very long project, but as you've been saying, very rewarding as well.
Yeah.
It's when you think of all the people that are involved in this scale of a project, from the architects to the department administration to all the contractors and all the vendors that are all part of this project. You know, there are times when you had 300 people working in the building or outside the building at one time. And so that's quite a testament to the pride of doing a good job.
Pride and passion, I think, right? Now, so Minnesota had kind of a state government in exile for the last couple of years, right? I think the governor was down at the foot of the mall at the Veterans Affairs Department, and who knows, the legislators scattered all around the place. Any others who were headquartered or officed at the state capitol had to move out for a while. And now they're coming back in.
Right. It's great to see people I haven't seen for a year and a half.
What's your name again? Face is familiar.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we were, some people were in the Centennial Office Building. We have always been in the basement of the Capitol.
Historical
Society. And when we moved out to the administration building for a couple of years, and now it's kind of like a homecoming for a lot of the people who have been around there for a long time. And for the people who are new, it's a great experience just to be in the Capitol.
Our state Capitol building has to rank among the most beautiful, the most wonderful architectural specimens of all the state houses around the country, right?
I mean,
this is no idle bragging. It's true, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We have people who come as part of our tours. What they do as their hobby is they visit capitals. So they travel and they already have their rankings. And they'll say, boy, this capital, and this was before the restoration.
Really?
People were saying, this is one of the most beautiful capitals we've seen, and we've seen 38 or 45 or all 50. And so now those same people, if they come back.
I hope they do.
They'll say, wow, this is probably near the top one or two or three that we've seen.
So I can hear the jaws dropping already, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Before we get into the particulars, and the particulars, folks, are fun. This is really fun. We're not going to do a seminar on architecture here. We're going to tell you about the really cool stuff. I want to know something. What were some of the unexpected surprises that the work crews found when they were tearing out fake walls and phony ceilings? Now, mind you, this building started construction when? In the late 19th century, was open for business in 1905.
Right.
So you had all these workmen from long ago, more than 111 years ago.
Yeah.
So what are some of the little unexpected gems that turned up?
We have a couple of boxfuls, actually.
Okay.
So we have, as they were taking out walls or, redoing different things or adding new ventilation, because the entire building has new heating, new electrical, everything's brand new in a historic building. And what they would find are things that had been left behind or fallen out of people's pockets as they're working. So we found an old felt hat, a black hat that someone had they were looking over into a shaft, and it had fallen off and got jammed in the shaft. So when they're taking that out, it's like, hey, we found a felt hat.
All right.
We found one shoe.
Yeah.
And we found the proverbial whiskey bottle.
Oh, of course. It couldn't be a state capital without a whiskey bottle. The construction crews, not the lawmakers, I'm sure.
Right.
Couldn't be, huh? Mm-hmm.
No, it was buried under the floor, so it had to have been the construction workers.
All right.
And we found, there's a really couple interesting ones that I've really enjoy seeing as we, there was a broken saw. And so you could see, you know, all you had left was the handle and about an inch or two of the saw. Mm-hmm. But what's really neat about that is you could see the handle was carved, was handmade. And so a testament to the guys who were doing these work.
The craftsmanship was
superb.
They were
making their own tools, and that's really a neat part of that story.
Now, workmen, no women then, workmen love to scrawl things on the walls that they know are going to be covered up. Did you find any little greetings? Any you can relate on the air?
No bad quotations. Okay. More just signatures or people saying, you know, C.M. McDonald, 1896.
So they did put the year, 1896.
Yeah,
that's
1904
cool.
Or whatever.
Oh, is that all covered up again? I suppose it is.
Yeah, because that was if you...
You took photos, though, I hope.
We have photos of that. But they had painted those on brick walls. And so then you have, of course, the plaster over the brick wall.
Sure.
So no one ever saw that.
Kilroy was here, kind of thing. Huh? Right. That's great. Well, folks, you've driven by the Capitol the last couple of years. To me, Brian, and I know the beauty of the place because I reported for duty there for a long time as legislative and government reporter for KSTP Channel 5. So that was where I didn't go to the station in the morning. I went straight to the Capitol. Lucky me, right to the press room and then, you know, trying to sniff out news wherever we might find it. But the last couple of years, not having been I drive by it, and it looked like it was sheathed in a shrink wrap, you know, all the way around. That's a huge building, too. And the dome looked to me like a giant bandaged thumb sticking straight up in the air. What are you doing to my beloved Capitol? I knew good things were happening.
Right.
But, boy, it did take a while. And what, more than $300 million to do this?
$310 million.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. So I, as a reporter there, remember the restoration of the Senate chamber and also at another time the House chamber. So it was kind of a piecemeal deal, not an, you know, overall restoration. And that really sorely needed doing, didn't it, the whole thing?
Yeah, and this was the first comprehensive inside-and-out restoration. As you mentioned, you know, the governor's office, our reception room had been restored in the 80s, and then the House and the Senate chambers, and we restored the Quadriga, took that down in the 90s, restored that, brought it back up.
The four horses, the gold horses up top, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, so if you walked around the building, you would see really kind of nice testaments to Cass Gilbert's vision by the restoration, but you would see on the outside, you know, deteriorating stone and things that were just kind of melting away because all that beautiful stone carving from 1900, you know, was disintegrating. And that was the big issue as parts of it were starting to break off or be really a detriment to people's safety. So.
Brian Pease of the Minnesota Historical Society. Brian is the site manager for the Historical Society at the state capitol. Sounds like a dream job to me, but the truth is it's a hard job. You've got a big, big building there, a precious jewel that has to be watched over and taken care of, and you do a great job. How many years have you been the site manager there, Brian?
Going on my ninth year.
Okay.
I started there as a tour guide. So
you did? Okay.
Yeah, and that was a century ago. So,
a century ago.
Yeah, or at least the last century.
Last century, okay.
So I started there in 1988.
Okay,
and
great.
So then worked through different positions, in supervisory positions, and now I'm the site manager. So.
We're going to talk about those tour guides and the rest here a little bit later in the show, but first we're talking about the condition, the deteriorating condition of the state capitol. Of course, our wonderful climate, our harsh winters, had a lot to do with this beautiful, first of all, the exterior. It's Georgia granite, isn't it? Beautiful Georgia granite, and the base stones are marble.
Right.
Marble, Georgia marble, yes, marble, and then granite, Minnesota granite, the base stone, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
foundation,
right.
Yep.
Right, yeah, and that was, you know, the Georgia marble was controversial when Cass Gilbert selected that as the exterior stone.
Georgia, well, that would be in America's South.
Right.
And construction was started not so many years after the end of something called the Civil War.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how did Cass Gilbert, by the way, was the 30-year-old-something, 30-something architect who won the commission to build the stadium. Imagine that, 30-some years old, and this guy wins. He'd go on to design and build the Woolworth Building in New York and the U.S. Supreme Court building, and and he's here. And so so there he is. He's faced with this literally a monumental task.
Right, and you know, and it doesn't start well in that way because people wanted stone carvers and the stone from Minnesota to be used in the Capitol. Sure. And so they were afraid if you're going to be taking stone, you know, not only is there maybe some of that Civil War repercussion left, but the majority of the, I think the thought was all the work's going to go down to Georgia. They're going to cut the stone down there. They're going to, you know, put it in pieces that need to be put in the building. And so the Butler Ryan Company, who were the general contractors of the original project, they said, let's just buy the quarry or lease the quarry. So they leased the quarry. And so then what they did is they cut out the middleman. So they cut out all those pieces of stone for the exterior of the Capitol in rough form, shipped them up to St. Paul, and then brought them to the work site. And then they built basically a stone carving and stone mill, you know, system here in the back of the Capitol.
So in a sense, it had kind of a Minnesota stamp on the Georgia marble.
Right. Huh? So you could bring in all the local craftsmen and artisans to do that fine tuning and the fine work, and
so that quieted any squabbling.
Right, about,
huh? That worked okay.
But he also compromised by saying, "Let's have that the floor and that ground, the foundation as a St. Cloud granite exterior stone, and then throughout the building inside, it's a Kasota limestone from southern Minnesota,
native limestone.
So when you walk through the building, there's all kinds of beautiful stone from throughout the world, but there's also a nice testament to Minnesota's stone as well.
Right. Our beautiful jewel of a state capitol now restored. There are some finishing touches still being done on it.
There's if you walk in there today, and I welcome anyone to come into the building, it's worth that visit. They're still doing some decorative stencil work, and so you actually can see of the artisans doing that work, and it's, you know, once again, very precise work. Mm-hmm. You have to take it slow. You have to put it in different layers because you're stenciling. And then they're also doing copper repair work on the roof. And so if you drive by there now, you'll still see kind of their shrouds or canopies around those domes. And that's where they're doing the work year-round.
Right. This capital actually is Minnesota's third, isn't it?
That's right.
Can you give us just a short course on the first and second, please?
Sure. The first capital was built in the territorial years. It was in St. Paul, downtown St. Paul. And as the state expanded, they kept adding wings to the building. And so by the 1870s, 1880s, it really wasn't a real attractive building. And then it burned down in 1881.
Didn't they always?
Yeah.
Every building.
State, you know? Every state has that story.
You could just go straight to the, it was built in, and then what year did it burn down? Because most of the time they did.
And so they built a second capel on the same location,
which is right across from Central Presbyterian Church and the Louis King of France, right there.
Right, and the Fitzgerald.
Right.
And so that the boundaries of the streets would have been Wabasha, Cedar, 10th, and Exchange.
Right.
And so then that new capitol, nice-looking building, but wasn't quite stately in its appearance and wasn't big enough. And there was also kind of some bad ventilation going on.
Right.
So they said, this isn't going to work in the long term, so let's look ahead. Let's find some nice property in St. Paul and build this grand building, which, of course, is what we have the result of.
As somebody said, they finally got it right the third time.
Huh? That's right.
Right. Brian Pease, site manager with the State Historical Society, the man who oversees the Minnesota State Capitol, newly restored, a place you need to visit with the whole family. It's open for business again right now. Jesse, let's take a quick break here. More on this beautiful edifice right after this. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents The Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
Hello, this is Stan Turner, and I'd like to personally invite you to join me on a tour of Normandy, London, and Paris, September 7th through the 17th. We'll tour some of the most important sites of World War II. We'll stay in London, and you'll be able to explore wartime London with a visit to Churchill's War Rooms and London's Imperial War Museum. We'll visit the D-Day Museum in Portsmouth, the only museum in Britain dedicated to telling the story of Operation Overlord and all aspects of the D-Day invasion. These are just a few of the highlights of our 10-day, 9-night tour of Normandy, London, and Paris. Airfare, transportation, and daily breakfast and dinner are included. However, seating is limited. To join me, please call Michael at Defined Destinations, 651-398-9358. That's 651-398-9358. Or go online to defineddestinations.com. Please join me, Stan Turner, as we play your requests, share your special dedications, and just have a lot of fun. It's the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Show with me, Stan Turner, weekdays noon to 2 on Club 1220 KLBB. We are back. We're fairly gushing over our wonderful Minnesota State Capitol building, newly restored now and open for business once again. And, folks, it's a place you've got to visit. Take the whole family up there. It'll make you proud beyond proud. Before we resume our conversation with Brian Pease of the State Historical Society, I want to give you a couple of details on a very special event tomorrow. This will be happening at the Chanhassen Dinner Theater and, just south of Minneapolis-St. Paul, right here in the metro area. Bob DeFloris, our good friend here, our movie expert who's often on this show, a man who grew up in Hollywood, right across the street from Ozzy and Harriet and Ricky and David, whose parents were entertainers in Hollywood. Bob is a film preservationist, historian, and he gets out in the community and presents the most wonderful shows about film and history and music tomorrow at Chanhassen Dinner Theater, starting at 3 o'clock. Bob will be doing what he calls Legends of Jazz, Part Number Two. After the enormous response to Legends of Jazz this past summer, Bob has pulled together an all-new compilation of famed jazz musicians of the past in Part Two. And again, vintage film. You not only hear but see these great entertainers like Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Count Basie, Lionel Hampton, Thelonious Monk, Dave Brubeck, Ben Webster, Coleman Hawkins, on and on and on and on. You'll want to be there. 3 o'clock at the Chanhassen Dinner Theater right there, in the Fireside Theater, they call it, within that complex there. Call the box office, 952-934-1525. That's, once again, it's 952-934-1525. The ticket price is very, very nice, only $12. If you want to stay for dinner afterward, that's optional, another $15. It's a heck of a deal. One great day. So tomorrow, Chanhassen Dinner Theater's Bob DeFloris, Legends of Jazz, Part 2. Boy, that's going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to that. Right now, 1225, back to Brian Pease and the Minnesota State Capitol. Well, Brian, with apologies to Abraham Lincoln, a house divided or coming unstuck cannot stand. And the Minnesota Capitol was starting to, in bits and pieces, fall apart, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
The harsh weather, age, the heavy hand of time, as somebody once called it.
Right, right. And the unfortunate thing about that Georgia marble was it really wasn't the best stone for Minnesota's climate. What's kind of interesting, the Rhode Island State Capitol is being built about the same time, kind of a parallel construction cycle. It was a little bit, almost a year ahead of our State Capitol's construction, but that's where Gilbert got that idea for the white Georgia marble. And as we were repairing the rotunda and the exterior dome before this project began, and the architects went out to Rhode Island and just to ask questions how their dome was holding up after, 110 years or 15 years. And they looked at the seams up in the dome, and they were still close to the original because they didn't have to do a lot of repair or retuck pointing or anything like that. And whereas our capital, instead of a 16th of an inch, it's a half inch wide. So you can see there's a lot of, just because of that wear and tear, the heat, the freeze and thaw, and really has a bad effect on that stone.
Very much so. I know the Capitol was leaking, wasn't it? Isn't there a dome within a dome within a dome?
There's three domes.
Three domes.
So what you see when you walk inside the rotunda, which is this grand, beautiful
majestic
space, 150 feet above you is this large masonry dome, and that's basically just a decorative dome. Then you have an upside-down cone that is made of brick and steel, and then that's holding up the lantern or where that gold ball is on top of the Capitol.
Yep.
And then the stone is resting upon its own weight on the outside. So there's really three domes as part of that series of domes inside.
And they did all this without a smartphone, Jesse. What do you think of that? No computers, just like the ancient Egyptians, huh?
That's right.
I don't think there was a handheld device on the construction site there, the pyramids of Giza.
Not a one.
No, it's amazing.
What about an abacus?
Pardon me?
What about an abacus?
Well, they had that. Sure. maybe. An Egyptian version, but maybe here, too.
Big one.
A big one, yeah. So the feat of engineering is just beautiful. It stands up well today.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Capitol got some good reviews once it was opened in 1905.
Oh, sure.
Nationally, maybe, internationally. Yeah. The dome, is that, in a sense, a replica of the dome on St. Peter's in Rome?
Right. So if you look at a lot of the architectural detail, it's very similar. Yeah. But everything in the Capitol, in the Minnesota State Capitol, it has a Minnesota twist to it or connection. Yeah. So instead of having some decorative panels on the outside of that dome, you might find in St. Peter's, he put North Stars in our dome. And so that's very unique to our state.
L'Etoile du Nord.
Our state model, the North Star state.
Right.
And so that's really, and you know, we take the pride of having one of the largest self-supporting marble domes in the world.
Mm-hmm. There's a self-supporting, and I climbed this staircase many times in the state capitol, the north side, by the House Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And it was used so much over the years, and this one in particular, probably people running upstairs and down to the House Chamber, that footfalls kind of made a groove in all the stairs going up there. And I'm wondering if that was thrown out with this renovation. I hope it's kept there. Because
it's still the original.
It's kind of concave, where you walk up the stairs from the people over.
All the original stone is still there.
Okay, good.
That was not part of the need to replace that.
Part of my footfalls helped dig those out, running up and down.
Millions of other people, too. So.
Don't charge me, though. Well, that's good to know. Some things have remained the same, but as you say, electricity, plumbing, the whole thing, just truly is a wholesale restoration.
Yeah, it's top to bottom, inside and out.
And talk about colors, and you've alluded to this or mentioned this already, but the colors, the original colors, now really pop. It was like peeling back the skins of an onion until you got down to the real original colors, because they'd been muted, hadn't they, over the years?
Yeah, but what would happen is, and you have to look back over the history of the building, they were burning coal, so, coal was everywhere in downtown St. Paul. Yeah. So the exterior of the building, even before it opened, it was already shades darker than it had originally looked when they put the stone up there, mm-hmm. because of that coal. Mm-hmm. And you had people smoking in the building. You have dirt and grime. So all the wall panels, everything was getting darker every couple decades. So they would have to repair some plaster, repaint a wall panel. So they would say, well, just match the paint. Well, that's already dirty, grimier, darker than the original.
So you're matching the dirty, dark.
Yeah, okay. So every campaign results in a darker layer of paint being created. And so when they did some of the work up in the third floor restoration several years ago, they peeled back six layers of paint and got to the original colors, and it's dramatic. It's completely different than what people have been seeing for 50, 60 years. So
that's what I'm waiting to see. Yeah. And when the time is right, I'm going to get up there, and I will not. It'll be unforgettable. I just can't wait. It's going to be just terrific. Well, we want to talk about the state capitol, not only its physical being, but its symbolic being. This is very much a memorial to Minnesotans and the Civil War, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's one of those things that kind of evolved that way. Gilbert, the tradition was in the second capitol, the state had seen the importance of displaying the Civil War battle flags. And so that was a tradition carried over in this brand new capitol in 1905. Mm-hmm. Cass Gilbert designed flag cases to display those flags. So that was one of the great events of the capitol's history, as the veterans from the Civil War came back carrying their flags.
On Flag Day, wasn't it?
On Flag Day, yeah. Carrying their flags back to put them in this new repository in the state capitol. And so that kind of began that whole, remembrance of the Civil War. And then there was pressure for Gilbert to put historic scenes in the state capitol someplace, and he chose and selected the governor's reception room. And that's where, if you go there and today, we just 2 weeks ago, we put the Civil War paintings back in that room. And so that was another homage or a recognition and remembrance of those Civil War veterans. And it was important to make those paintings as accurate as possible because those men were still alive.
So they would
be the people who would be your toughest critics. If you, as the artist, didn't do a good job, you would hear about that pretty quick.
You would.
And so then, you know, statues on the second floor were added for Civil War officers. And, you know, it really is kind of a testament today of remembering the Civil War and Minnesota's role in that important conflict in our
history. I remember sitting on the second level of the rotunda, sitting, you know, talking to lobbyists or lawmakers, and looking up at these literally bigger than life Civil War figures. Colville was one of them. The others, can you tell us?
Sure, yeah.
Well, I know you know.
I do know, yeah. It's not a trick question.
No, it's not.
No,
Brian Pease knows his stuff.
William Colville was colonel of the 1st Minnesota, famous for their charge at Gettysburg. Next to him in that rotunda is Alexander Wilkin, who was a St. Paul, he was a U.S. Marshal, an attorney, but also the highest ranking officer from the state to be killed in the Civil War. Right. So he was honored, you know, decades after with the statue.
And a county named after him, too, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Wilkin County, right. And then you have John Sanborn, who was a colonel of the 4th Minnesota, became one of our highest-ranking officers in the Civil War. And so he was a pretty well-revered, you know, he's a judge, you know, pretty well-liked as an attorney and so forth. And then on the fourth panel is our fourth niche is James Shields, who was our first state senator. And he had the distinction of being the only American citizen to ever serve as a senator in three different states.
Wow.
So Minnesota, Illinois, and Missouri.
What, was he looking for the perfect state? I don't know. He got around.
Yeah.
Colonel Colville, you talked about, he was badly wounded, as most of them were in the battles, and he carried with him till his dying day some of the bullets or the shrapnel in his body. He was a big man. He was about 6'6".
Yeah.
Very unusual for his time, for that time.
And a big target.
And a big target, and he exposed himself to gunfire, as they most always did.
Right.
And this man was in great pain for the rest of his life. I think he divided his time between the Duluth area and then Cannon Falls area.
Yep,
he may be buried there, I think.
Yeah, he's buried in Cannon Falls.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to see these. This is not a monument to war. It's a monument to the men who tried to preserve them and succeeded in preserving the Union.
Right.
And what a grand gesture that is.
Yeah. And there's a very poignant story with Colville as well, because he was invited for that big flag ceremony in 1905, and he came and was visiting some of the old comrades, was staying at the veterans home in Minneapolis, and passed away in his sleep two days before that grand event. And so they took his body and laid him in state in the Capitol. So he was the first to lay in state in the brand new Capitol.
Tragic but appropriate, I would say. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and some of the newspaper accounts, you know, as they're marching by with their flags, the old veterans march by the casket and gave a final salute.
So the war ended in 1865. This march was held in 1905, where the by then grizzled Union veterans from Minnesota carried the flags from the second Minnesota Capitol downtown there near the Fitzgerald Theater up the hill. They marched up there too, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And I think they aged faster in those days, maybe not as so good as today. They had been through hell in the war and came home, you know, and had to resume their lives, many of them battle wounded, combat wounded. And no big parades. Maybe there was one when they got back, but then it was, hey, get back to work.
Right.
Get back
to
your life. Yep. And they look very weary. They look very old, but they look very proud in that photograph as they carry these banners. And we still can see them because of these battle flags, Brian. You can tell us more about that. They have been restored themselves in recent years.
Yeah, that was a project we completed, well, did from about 2008 to 2011 and 2012, where the flags, when they brought those from the second Capitol to the brand new Capitol, and they had tied all the flags tightly around the flagstaffs. And so when they brought them to this brand new Capitol in 1905, that's how they were displayed. Well, over the
years... They were furled then, were they? They were tightly wound?
Yeah, tightly wound around the flagstaff. Yeah. And so if you were to walk in and there's accounts, if you walked into the Capitol and looked underneath the battle flags, you would see parts of the flags on the floor. And this was in the 1960s. So they were
shredding, weren't they?
They were just falling apart. Yeah. And so they had a flag conservator or restorer come in, and he tried to piece all the pieces together and then sandwich the silk fabric between crepoline. So he had a crepoline sheet on the top and the bottom, then zigzag stitch with monofilament line the entire length of the flag every inch or two, so all the pieces could be kept together.
Oh.
Then you could put them on the flagstaff unfurled. And so what we did is, as this part of this project is we took them off the flagstaffs because gravity was also doing some damage with them hanging the way they were,
mm-hmm.
and put each one, mounted them on a panel. And right now we rotate in four new flags every 8 to 9 months where for the first time in for many of these flags in 150 years, you can actually see them as they would have appeared and what, you know, what's left of them. A lot
sure,
of those flags
sure.
pieces have been deteriorated.
Or they were shot to pieces on the battlefield,
right.
too.
And what, right. What we also discovered, you know, veterans are after the war, they actually started souveniring parts of the flag so you can see where those little squares or rectangles
I can understand that, though.
Oh, sure.
They shed their blood.
Right. And those flags were such an important part of what they were fighting for. That was the worst disgrace in the battle, is to surrender or give up your flag. If you had your flag captured, you know, it's like, I'm not going home.
Wow.
It's that tough
wow.
to go back
the
home.
The ultimate disgrace.
Just, exactly.
And those flags, in many cases, were made by the women back here at home.
They were, yeah. Yeah, that was...
Lovingly.
Right, yeah. And that's, you know, they understood their sons and their brothers, their blood would be...
Yeah.
Part of those flags someday.
Yes, yes.
So.
You, on a previous tour, you've shown me, this is something that just takes your breath away, Jesse, you got to listen to this. In one of the showcases, and I hope it's back behind glass now,
is
a flagstaff. It's a flagstaff, you know, with carry the flag on. This is from the Civil War, obviously. But it's spliced together. This is an amazing story, Brian.
Sure. Once again, we're talking about the 1st Minnesota Regiment, Infantry Regiment at Gettysburg. They were there for the last 2 days of that 3-day battle. On the second day, they were part of a charge where they lost 82% of their men, either killed or wounded. So that, you know, a lot of historians say that was one of the pivotal events of that battle, helped save the Union Army that day, possibly even the Union cause in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And then on the third day, the thought was that Lee was going to attack on the flanks of the army, so... You know, there wasn't much left of the 1st Minnesota as a fighting force, so they put him in the center of the line, and that's exactly on the third day where Lee attacked. So they were under fire. They lost another 13 men killed in Pickett's charge, but as part of that battle was unfolding, the Minnesota color bearer was shot in the hand, and the bullet sliced the flagstaff in half. And so he dropped the flag. Another soldier picked it up and snapped off the bottom half of the flagstaff because it was kind of flapping around, and started running toward the enemy, and as I had mentioned, it's like, what's he doing? All these other veterans of the Civil War and the 1st Minnesota are saying, we have to follow the flag because he's going to have our flag captured if we don't do something. So they charged after him and then ran into the 28th Virginia Infantry as part of that Pickett's charge and, you know, basically in a hand-to-hand struggle, captured their flag. And so, of course, Lee's forces were repulsed because of that charge and the success of the Union Army. And so they brought that flagstaff back from Virginia and then took the bottom half of that flagstaff and spliced it to the Union flagstaff that they had because they only had half of that flagstaff. So, yeah, I agree. It's one of the most kind of significant artifacts we have because mm-hmm. you see kind of that joining of the North and South.
There you are.
There's some symbolism
very
tied into that.
Profound symbolism
yeah.
there. And that is on display.
Yeah, we put
Capitol.
That back.
Thank you.
Just
glad.
For you to see again.
Just
so
for
that.
Me. It's yeah. just thank you. I think for yours truly and thousands of others,
yeah,
if they don't know about it, they will, and they'll never
yeah,
forget it.
It's a great artifact.
It really
as part
is.
Of our state's history.
Brian Pease of the State Historical Society. We're fairly gushing about the restoration, the $310 million restoration. Taxpayer dollars at work. They could not been put to work in a better way, I think. And you mentioned the governor's reception room and the murals in there, these larger-than-life paintings, or actually maybe almost life-size paintings of some of the Civil War battles there. Now, there's been some controversy over it. You are a non-political entity. The State Historical Society does not take political stances or positions.
Right.
I want to make that clear.
Right.
But there was a dust-up over whether those murals depicting the battles should be there, should be, you know, obviously
right.
scenes of violence and killing and, you know, all that sort of thing. And yet a unique and profound part of our heritage, of our history here. They are back up on the wall now, are they?
They are, yeah. And that's, you know, if you have a capital preservation project, you know, that's kind of a big word, preservation. Mm-hmm. So you really want to keep as much of the historical integrity in those spaces mm-hmm. as possible. And those have been such an important part of the history of that space. And as I mentioned, you know, I often tell people when I do a tour on the Civil War, it's like, okay, you're standing in the same location where a Civil War veteran was coming back with his family and saying, you know what? That's me in that painting.
Oh, shit. That's a mind blower.
And
that really is. And that happened,
like,
didn't it?
Yeah, and that's what these veterans were coming back as, yeah, these artists did such a great job, it's almost putting me back there. You know, it might have been, you know, for World War II veterans, that scene in Private Ryan.
Sure, yes.
I'm sure it took people back to that moment in time, good or bad, and, you know, time of reflection for a lot of those soldiers. So, you know, and that's the idea of remembering the Civil War in the Capitol. There's generations, millions of other people have come and seen those paintings, and they are revered as great works of art.
They are part and parcel, too, and Cass Gilbert, the architect, was not unhappy to have them up there, I'm sure.
Hmm? No, yeah. Yeah, okay. It was something, and his dad was a Civil War veteran, too.
I didn't know that. So, all the more reason.
So any generation, you know, you couldn't have been alive in 1896 to 1905 when this building was being built and not be affected by the war.
Right.
Because you had a father or a grandfather who was part of that conflict. Mm-hmm. And so
the man who became Archbishop Ireland, he was a priest. I think he was with one of the regiments.
Yeah.
He's depicted on one of the paintings, too.
Yeah, he's in one of the Battle of Corinth painting in the anteroom.
Right, that's it. Now, there are four Civil War murals? In the reception room?
Four in the reception room, two in the ante room.
Two in the ante room.
So total of six.
There are still two large frames empty.
Right.
And can you tell us briefly the story of that?
Sure. That's where the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux painting was located originally in 1905, and then also a painting of Father Hennepin discovering St. Anthony Falls. Mm-hmm. So as part of this public debate and discussion about what should be appropriate in the Capitol, you know, those two were deemed offensive for a lot of the Dakota people of the state's history. So it was decided that they would be removed from that space and then put in another location in the Capitol and with better interpretation. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're working at right now as the Historical Society has come up with some really nice interpretive conversation pieces and dialogues that people can listen to.
That's needed in the case of these two, and everybody would agree with that.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. You know, that whole treaty is such an important part of the story of Minnesota history because that eventually led to the U.S. Dakota War, which was a significant event in our state's history as well.
So right now there are two blank spaces on the wall in the governor's reception room needing a painting. Maybe they could do one of you and one of me, Brian.
Sure. Well, there's little square sections.
Very small.
We could put our faces in.
Mine would be smaller than a postage stamp, and that even then would be too big.
Well, Cass Gilbert actually did that for Channing Seabury, who was the vice president of the Capitol Commission, and Cass Gilbert in his mural in the Senate chamber.
Really?
He put their profiles in behind some of the figures.
Really?
So yeah, we can ask for the same thing.
Maybe there's hope for us yet, huh?
Sure.
Okay, get our second of fame in the reception room. Brian Pease, State Historical Society site manager at the Minnesota State Capitol, talking about the beautiful, wonderful, majestic restoration of our state house. We're back with more in just a minute. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Be enchanted this winter. Visit ice castles in Stillwater and bring fairy tales to life with features like frozen archways, tunnels, ice slides, fountains, and even a frozen throne. It's fun for the whole family. During the day, the castle is a beautiful glacial blue, but in the evening, it's lit with LED lights that dance to music. There will even be surprise appearances by princesses. This is one winter activity you don't want to miss. Ice castles, now open through February, weather permitting. For more information, visit icecastles.com. That's icecastles.com.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents The Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at jaimes.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Wolf Swanson.
And hey, I'm Pat Wolf.
Our motto has always been to ask for Wolfs. But Prohibition forced our family to stop brewing Wolf beer. To this day, our legacy can still be seen all over Stillwater.
So it's only fitting, Kathy, that Wolf beer is back in the valley, especially after a 93-year dry spell.
Don't you think Great Grandpa Joe would be so proud?
I do. And that's why we invite you to visit wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finder to locate a store near you. And then ask for Wolfs, Stillwater's original craft beer.
Space. We're back. Thank you for being with us here. I wish we had 5 hours to talk about our newly restored Minnesota State Capitol building. There's so much to talk about. Who better to talk about it than Brian Pease? He's the head man over at the State Capitol from the State Historical Society. And Brian, the Star Trib did an interesting little piece a few weeks ago on kind of the Capitol by the numbers, the restoration here. Let's see, just to pick a couple, 30,000 pieces of exterior marble marked and cataloged during this. 30,000 pieces of marble, 800 pieces of historical furniture in the Capitol, most of it designed by architect Gilbert. Was this in storage, or what was the deal?
Yeah, a lot of it was already being used in the building, okay. And some of it was in our storage in the Historical Society, okay. and we gathered it from other buildings in the complex.
All cleaned up, varnished, and in use again?
It's all restored. It's repurposed in different rooms. It's really amazing to see that work.
Six, count them, six reclaimed skylights. Can you say daylight, more light, huh?
Yeah, that was something, you know, the building was wired with electricity, but Cass Gilbert also knew, you know, it wasn't as bright as we might be used to today, so he incorporated as many skylights as
But they were
possible.
Covered over and blacked out, weren't they, over
they
the
were,
years?
They were, yeah, unfortunately.
Thank you. They're open now, folks. Lots more light on state government. You can read some symbolism into that. 53 pounds of nails used to recreate the patterns on 10 leather doors, door panels, and the frames in the House and Supreme Court chambers. All those nails, huh? I remember those doors, yeah.
Yeah, and those are the big brass-headed nails.
Sure. 242 Cass Gilbert-designed exterior wood windows in the building's facade. Now, some of those windows were replaced, were they not?
They were all replaced.
All replaced, one of them, okay.
We went back, they were aluminum back put in the 60s or 70s, now we put back the wood windows as they would have been in 1905.
Okay. This is not too romantic, but 750,000 pounds of new duct work. You got to have that in the Capitol.
You do.
All new pipes and plumbing and all the rest. Let's just take the chamber, the Senate chamber. What's new there, just in brief? This is the west, second floor, wing of the Capitol.
Yeah, they're... you know, that was one of those chambers we had restored in 1988. Right. And so we really didn't have to do a lot of investigation, see what the color was in the wall panels. That had all been done. So, you know, the more visible things you'll see is a brand new carpet, which is a reproduction of the reproduction of the original.
Wait a minute. A reproduction of the reproduction of the original.
Right.
Okay. So the original twice removed.
Right. So it's still as if you walked in that chamber in 1905, that's what you would have seen.
Oh, lovely. I can't wait to see
that. And then the big thing in that room is we have the largest murals in the Capitol are found in that chamber. And so that's where there was a lot of that fine art restoration completed. And it's that in itself is a show, you know, worthy of an hour, if not more, because
you're coming back, friend. We got lots to talk about here.
But what we had discovered, and you can't find this out until you actually get to the canvas, you know, you have to build scaffold to, you know, get 40, 50 feet above you or even 100 feet to see some of those murals in the dome. And so what the conservators discovered is, unfortunately, we never knew this before, but most of the paintings had been overpainted, either in the 30s or the 50s. So the compositions are the same, but they brought in artists, probably as a WPA project to keep artists employed, and they would paint over a rock instead of making it reddish as it was originally. It's more of a tan. They would put drapery on scantily clad women.
Really?
To cover up some of the
nudity. That's an outrage. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. And so
the situation is, you know, we want to conserve them, bring them back to their original colors. And so the conservators, in order to get that paint off, they didn't want to use a chemical because then you might damage the original painting. They took knitting needles or bone folders or even anything with a sharp point and chipped away inch by inch all that overpaint that was not part of the original. So that in itself is a remarkable testament of patience and endurance.
Really?
A lot of work.
In a sense, re-undressed some of the women portrayed in the murals. I mean, I don't expect you to comment on that, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
It's, no, no, it's family. It's family friendly, though, folks.
No, and there wasn't any of that that no. we were able to uncover, you know, okay. the covering up. But okay. but it, what we see now is the true colors.
Great, great.
There's things that have been revealed that have been covered up or, you know, not as apparent in the past. So that's okay. really a great part of the story.
Let's go down the hall, north end of the Capitol, second floor, the House Chamber. 135 members there, right?
Right, and once again, that carpet had been replaced with an original duplication or reproduction in 1989, mm-hmm. and that had been worn out after, you know, 25 years. And so that's a brand new carpet there. They did a lot of touch-up in the stencil work because some of the plaster damage mm-hmm. was there or evident, and so that was done. There's a large statuary group called the Spirit of Government, which was added to that space in the 1930s, and they put a new layer of gold leaf behind that statuary group mm-hmm. with the fleur-de-lis. And just really, you know, that chamber, all the chambers just pop because the colors are vibrant and, you know, they have a new varnish. You know, the old varnish had discolored. So what you see is really these vibrant spaces once again. When, as I've said before, as if you were a visitor walking into the building in the early 1900s, this is what you would have seen in the building. So
that is exciting. Then down the hall further, same floor, second level, east end of the state capitol building, what was for, you know, from the beginning, the state Supreme Court chambers.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's a testament to that. That skylight had been covered as long as I've been there. Mm-hmm. And once again, until you get up there, you don't really know what it's about. And so what we figured out once they started doing the demolition is they had put in custom-made plastic lighting covers. And so we weren't you weren't even seeing the glass or you weren't even seeing the light coming through.
Oh.
And so that's the thing that was exciting about that. It's covered right now because of that copper roof repair, but mm-hmm. when they're done, that skylight is now open again, and so that brings a whole different lighting effect in that chamber. And those large four murals there were restored or conserved as well, and those are just astounding. Those are just remarkable, the colors that come out of that.
Amazing. Now, the Minnesota Supreme Court has, you know, some years ago moved over next door to the judicial building right nearby. Mm-hmm. But they do come over to the original, we call it the historic Supreme Court chambers in the Capitol now. They meet there. They actually hold hearings, what, once a month, is it?
Yeah, they hold hearings twice a month.
Twice a month, okay.
Or 2 weeks in a month. And so they spend the first week of the hearings at the state capitol. Mm-hmm. Second week is at the Judicial Center.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So, folks, you know, wow, this is your house. Go look at it. It's something to, it is something just to amaze you and make you so, so very proud. There's so much to talk about, Brian Pease, here. I remember Sinclair Lewis, the great Minnesota author. He once stood way back, I think it was on one of the bluffs east of St. Paul, and looked at the dome of the Minnesota State Capitol, then looked to his left to the dome of the Cathedral of St. Paul, and he christened it the Imperial Sweep, grandiose language. But it really is magnificent, isn't it, when you come in from the east especially, see those two domes. At night, the lanterns, you know, the topmost part of both domes at the Cathedral and at the State Capitol are all aglow.
Yeah, I think one of the best views is if you come over the Smith Avenue Bridge from Cherokee Heights, and you can see the whole, you know, scene unfold in front of you, mm-hmm. and that is pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it really is. I've got to ask you, since I'm a member of the Corps, the press corps, the news media. Well, let's see, I remember when I started there as a cub reporter that the press corps was housed in what I might call a sheetrock and sheetrock and plywood jungle of all places, second level of the rotunda, one of the most beautiful places in a beautiful building, and it was just really tacky and untoward. But that's we didn't ask for it, but that's where they put us, the administration department. Right. The nice part of it was that we opened on to the balcony over the south portico, so in good weather we could open the big, you know, double doors and do broadcast interviews outside and looking at the mall. It was beautiful, but that view, but ugly as far as what was done to the interior of the Capitol. So eventually we got moved down to the basement where a lot of people think we belong, and come on now. And so we were there, and I covered lots of stories from the basement press room there. And now we've been relocated again, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Same level, I understand.
Yeah, same level.
Still in the basement.
They actually have nice office spaces. They're all, you know, in, like you said before, it was like a rabbit warren because they would just add another media outlet into the basement. Mm-hmm. And they would add another wall, and so, you know, people were crammed into these little cubicles, if you could even call that. And
that's what I was in. Well, we had a little one.
And so now, you know, and you have to talk to the press corps today to get their opinions, but it's really a nice.
Oh, place. They'll grouse. We always do. No windows in the basement.
That's true.
But Brian, you have come up. You have risen. Your office as site manager for the Historical Society. Right. You were in the basement too.
Yeah.
You were a cellar dweller with us.
We were.
But
now
you've come up in the world, haven't you?
We were moved to the ground floor. East side of the state capitol, and so I do have two windows now in our office. So that's a something we've never seen before. But what's really neat about that is where we are now is the historic home of the Minnesota Historical Society, because we were housed in the capitol in 1905 in that same location. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a neat full cycle.
Full circle. Yeah. It's very nice. Okay, you said that you started as a tour guide, and now, of course, you've got to talk about full circle. You're training tour guides there now, and
sure.
Now that the Capitol is back open again, you've got a largely new crop of tour guides.
We do.
How do you train them? What do you go through?
We do a lot of, we don't have a scripted tour, so we give them a lot of three-ring binders with lots of information, and pretty much they come up with their own tour and their stories on their tour. They have to still talk about the basic process, mm-hmm. government process, what happens in the chambers, the mm-hmm. art, the architecture. But, you might be on one tour and someone might talk a little bit more about William Colville than another guy. But that guy might talk about Floyd B. Olson. So there's there's a lot of openness or ability to kind of craft your tour. Mm-hmm. And so
kind of freestyle in a way. You pick and choose what interests you, and then you can pass that along to the people who come.
So
and
a
lot
experience.
Of people come every year. They come from all over the world, tour groups, don't they?
Yeah, and we have over 100,000 people that visit. We've recorded people from 100 different countries a year that will come and visit the state capitol.
Right. I remember very vividly as a grade schooler in St. Louis Park, we were bused over to the state capitol. It's a few years ago, Brian. And I can clearly see this, what now I know it was the Senate chamber, and I had no idea what do these people do here. And many years later, when I became a capitol, I asked the same question. No, I'm just kidding. But it's amazing. Those tours as kids leave a big impression on you, really. Yeah, it's mystifying in many ways. Tour guides do a great job, but you still have to fill in a lot of the pieces to understand what really goes on there.
Yeah, and that's what, we tell our tour guides. They might have a long day, but for that one kid from northwestern Minnesota, this might be the only chance they ever get to the Capitol.
That's
so
true.
You got to do a good job for
that.
That
is so true. Just leave us with one special thought about the restored Capitol, Brian. We just have a couple seconds left.
Sure. I say get there as fast as you can. Yeah. There's a big celebration, too, coming in August, 11th through the 13th of August.
And Friday, Saturday, Sunday in August.
And that's going to be a really neat thing of just kind of letting people have a free,
wonderful
opportunity to come to the Capitol. So that's a big thing to look forward to as well.
It's your house, folks. Go see it.
It huh?
Belongs to you. You've paid for it. Brian Peace, thank you for taking such good care of it, and thank you for coming down today.
You're welcome. We
got so much more to talk about. We got to get you back, okay? Thank you. Brian Peace of the State Historical Society talking about our beautiful Capitol. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Nice weather. And we'll be back here with the All Request Show right after the news at noon on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
This is where your music and memories live. Club 1220.
KLBP.
Stillwater, Minneapolis, St. Paul.